Oui, c'est pas ce qu'on dit.
Yeah. Hello everyone. So that's the third year we have this wonderful room in Potsdam, and that's the second year I'm going to talk about LLMs in spam filtering. So from last year talk, when I was talking about using LLMs for spam filtering, a year has passed, and I would say that I'm still a bit skeptical about fully replacement of spam filtering with a single LLM, because it's still a bit unstable, it's still quite costly, so you can ask it multiple times and get different opposite results. And what's more important, there are some privacy concerns that are not solved, and for sure there are problems with explanation why this message got rejected or not, because you can't simply get into LLMs that deeply to understand why this decision has been made. But for sure, we have added more support for LLMs in spam filtering. In particular, we added LLM context, we added web search context, so it's in general possible to represent to LLM not only current message, but also history of previous emails, and it was quite useful, but it's still one thing. But what has changed in the past year is that development with LLM has changed dramatically, so it's now a completely different thing. Some people are thinking about it like replacement from assembly to compiled language, and when we previously has written code manually, now you can just write some prompt and get the code from LLM. So basically, in 2024, what did we have? We have code completion with Copilot. We have that was quite good. So basically, you can write small things and get helps from assistant that can check your code and suggest something good or not. But it worked in this way. So it was mostly assisted coding with auto completion. For sure, it was mostly for one. File edits. And also it could do some documentation lookup, so you start to type and you get documentation about this or that function. So in 2025 it's completely different story. So basically you have your LLM as a fully assistant that writes code, that can design architecture, that can do multi-file refactoring, all things about it, writing tests, testing stuff, debugging things, debugging issues, fixing them, making reasoning, making commits, doing Git workflow properly. So finally I get proper commit messages, for example. That's a big gain, actually. And for sure it can do lots of projects. So literally my current workflow is the following. So I have two console tools, Cloud Code and Refactory Droids, and I'm using them for different models. So I'm using Git work trees for doing stuff independently from the main branch. And different models can work with different, basically, work trees and do their own stuff there, isolated from the main environment. It's very useful because, after all, you get results, you review them carefully, and you select what to get. And also, it's good to run different subagents because it's a big save of tokens, big save of contexts. And if you work on some huge projects, it's good to split it into small parts and refactor them independently in different models and different subtrees. But I guess many of you who are developing with LLMs, after some experiences, and end up with something similar. So the main gain, and I think the main advantage of all this assisted coding, is that you can prototype fast. So I have lots of ideas, and one of the biggest issues is that some ideas are too large to implement. So I'm going to explain it a bit later about some examples of these large ideas. But now you can just do this, and this. And if you don't like, you can just throw out the code and you have no regrets of that. That's a big thing. Yeah, and you can actually explore different things, because if something doesn't work, you can always go back and build something else. And again, you don't have a lot of regrets about missed opportunities, about missed time, and about missed movement of your fingers to write this code. And that's very good. Another big advantage is really better documentation. English is not my first language, and I'm not very good in describing things. And that's, I think, a problem for any author of software, because you know your software better, and you imply a lot of things that are not apparent to other people. And you get angry if you get stupid questions, but they're not stupid, because basically it's your knowledge, and if you apply your knowledge to this question, it's stupid. But it's not stupid because you are not explicitly defining that. And one biggest help was automated boilerplate stuff. For example, DevOps, it's terrible without LLM. You need to know Ansible, you need to program in YAML, you need to do deployments, endless deployments, and this pipeline is got absolutely fixed by LLM. So if I get my server crashed or revoked or hacked, I can easily rebuild them now. Because previously it was like secret knowledge of that is nowhere documented, and you have no documentation, nothing like that. Because as I've said, Respondee started as a hobby project, and mostly building it to something bigger, building it to the fully open source project, was a bit painful, and mainly about side projects such as documentation, analytics, and stuff like that. A real disadvantage is that you are a bit out of context. So you have multiple models that are doing their stuff, and sometimes you don't even understand what you are doing now. So, yeah, sometimes some conversations can be very difficult. So I remember one issue got into a reply from Claude that it told me, like, you know RespondD better, please advise me where to go. So that was a real conversation. And it was very, very long thing. And sometimes it starts to do very simple solutions. So quite recently I've found some bug and tried to debug it, and Claude decided to let's compare pointer to function, and if this pointer has malloc pattern, it's bad pointer. So of course it's bad pointer, but the question is not if it's bad or not, but the question is why it's bad. You need to be very clear about that. And for sure, it's impossible to fully build large projects without human attention, because AI attention, it's a mathematical thing and it's quite limited, I would say. So LLM is not an expert in RespondD. LLM is expert probably in writing code, but not in your specific area. Yes, and for sure you have the main expertise. Yes. And one thing that it's quite important for the open source as a in the whole, that actually your own value is a bit lower now, because many people can actually check the same things. So if you have a question about RespondD, I think yesterday we asked one question from Claude, and it found a wrong solution. But when we fixed prompt, something like check documentation and do it properly, it created a proper solution with like multi-map with two conditions, like get this from and get this recipient and get them matched. Very simple thing, like a simple rule that many people are doing in their day-to-day job to filter some specific spam or do some specific policies. But now it's possible to do with Claude, but unfortunately not directly. So if you ask it to do like write me a rule for SpamD to do this and this and this, usually it's wrong. It's just wrong. So actually what are not problems and what is usually addressed to LLM development is that code bloat is not a problem, because if you write prompts carefully, if you review carefully, if you ask LLM to refactor bad places, it's okay. Same as for LLM slope, so you can actually ask before commit to fix and clear everything, it's okay. Hallucinations is again a problem, but you know that it's crap and you can fix it. again, you can review. And actually, you can ask another module to check documentation and check the code and do review and find this hallucination and fix it. So it's not a real problem. So here is a short list of different prototypes that I've done over a year. And not many of them are parts of Responda itself, because there are lots of things around. How to manage documentation, how to build new site, how to build analytics, how to write client integrations in different languages, which is also quite interesting because, for example, I don't know Go, but many people were asking me about native clients for Go. And it was very simple to convert Rust client to Go client with all crypto stuff and stuff like that. So it was quite good. Finally, we have alerting, for example. Finally, we have interfaces for our own internal structure, and that was quite useful. So, okay. I'm fine about the first part. And now I'm going to tell about some of significant projects that were done over a year. One thing that I was thinking for maybe like 2 years so far was adding fuzzy detection for HTML structure. The problem is that many spam is built from templates. And these templates have different texts, different basically addressing, like dear somebody, dear, different text and stuff like that. Sometimes they have different personalized links with the same domain, but different hashes, different queries. And the idea was to build a fuzzy hash on top of HTML structure only. So get all tags. Extract features from that, like what tag follows, what tag, what styles are used. And what's more important, that we also include so-called call-to-action domains. Again, call-to-action thing is actually what is clicked by users. So like what domain get clicked from this email with some button like subscribe, unsubscribe, go, whatever. Because there are lots of links that are not relevant. So, for example, you have on footer something like Facebook and policy and stuff like that, but these links are irrelevant. And we only check call to action links. Then we use the same algorithm for fuzzy hashes that we use, shingles. It's like mean hash trick, so it's quite simple and trivial. And then you find similarities between different shingles and compare how close it to some matched thing. So you have some hash with shingles and you match them either directly if it's had exactly the same structure or a bit indirectly if we have some common things but not different. But what's important that we use call to action for hashing everything. So if call to action changes, it's a different hash. The reason for that was to distinguish phishing from normal emails, because sometimes spammers are just getting legit emails and just fix domain and that's it. But we need to distinguish them from normal emails. So why it's important? Because we can do proper whitelisting with fuzzy hashes. We can get some brands, shipping order confirmations, one-time codes, alerts. And that's whitelisting part, and that's important to have a legit emails database for known senders, known, for example, let's imagine like social network like Facebook, LinkedIn. They have different content, but their template is always the same, and that's good to find stuff like that for whitelisting, because for good spam filtering system, whitelisting is even more important than blacklisting, to be honest. But for sure, it's okay for blacklisting as well. So we have some real-life testing. And it really works well with templated emails. And they still exist, and they're still widespread. Some examples of that. Lottery scams, phishing, template-based fraud, stuff like that. So in general, that was very good project. And I would say other... If I did it, write full code on my own, it would take maybe 2 or 3 times longer to implement. Now it's up and running and it's okay. Yes, and CTA was just like a benefit because now we can get the real links and distinguish them from insignificant links.
How do you get those significant links?
Oh, sorry, I don't know how to get back. So significant links are usually detected by belonging to specific classes like button, mm-hmm. or they are highly visible by CSS, and they are not in footer. So we are trying to detect this by heuristics. But again, that's for sure it's sets of heuristics, and it's possible to cheat them somehow. But now spammers are not trying to break it, because probably it's just too new. Another project that was surprisingly a failed Google Summer of Code project, and to be honest, I'm not quite sure how Google Summer of Code is planning to proceed in this year for because of LLM, to be honest. I really don't understand. So historically, we had only spam and harm classification, and the idea was basically to extend this to multi-class. And for sure, the mathematics behind Bayesian theorem is not strictly married with binary classification. You can do one versus all, which is actually used, or something else. And it's good to check not only spam and harm, but also mark different other labels, such as transactional emails, social emails, personal emails, and so on and so forth. And yes, now we have multiple class, and this actually is wrong. So I personally don't suggest to mix spam and harm and different other classes, so I personally suggest to have different classifiers. One is binary for spam harm, and one is NRE for other labels.
How do you train it?
Same thing. So basically, you get corpuses and train them via common line tool. So this is the whole architecture, basically. So you get message, you extract, split it into bigrams, add some meta tokens, and then you have hash lookups on side of Redis, so it's all implemented as Redis scripts. And on Redis, you just get all classes there, and you get multiple results afterwards. So basically, again, two calls is wrong. It's one call. So you call it once with all pipeline of tokens, and you let Redis scripts to get back weights. And then you get these weights, and basically get a result that, for example, it's spam and use. It's okay.
There's no user training, like end users training it by marking it as junk.
Yes, so you can for sure do this. So there is all tooling, but for sure it's not like out of the box. It's like a very new feature, and it takes some time to get into, let's say, mail cow. If it's in mail cow, it gets extensively tested by many users. So it's a good thing. Yeah, okay, I have not much time to talk about it, but one thing that was a long standard project was to convert fuzzy from UDP to TCP, just basically to dodge Hetzner port scan broken logic. And in October, it was a big incident that affected thousands of users over the world. And even I had to write email like, you break the internet in the half of the world by this. Yes, and the idea was basically to switch it to TCP, and it was also quite difficult. And so from one side, it was simple, like, let's convert some protocol from UDP to TCP, but in general, it was very difficult because you need to think about lots of things, like how to switch, like how to fall back, what to do if your TCP connection is over, how to frame things inside of TCP stream, how to multiplex between different connections. So it was quite a big project. But I hope in future it will be much, much better. I've started it as my own project, but I never finished the client part. Why? Because it's just a mess. You start to implement it, and at some point you just lose all hopes to make it anyhow usable for production. I think it's a common sense when you're trying to refactor a big chunk of code, and at some point you just give up. Yes. And the final project, hopefully I have 5 minutes left, and that's one of the most interesting because not only because I've implemented it the most recently, but it was a talk in the Matrix room where my previous experiments about using embeddings for classification were not so successful. But I built more prototyping around it, and what's more important, I've reworked this part. So previously it was a two layers neural network without normalization layers and this, I think, softmax at the end. But now I have dropout layer, a normalization layer, fix it from ReLU to GLU, change it, ROCness normalization. So a lot of tunes around my own classification engine, and it was very good. So basically, what we are doing now? We get display text part, like if it's HTML, it's multi-part alternative, we select HTML part. If it has some large HTML attachment and nothing else, we also select this attachment. If we have only text, then we select text. So basically select text part. Then we do so-called smart trimming of text. So for example, if we have long chain of replies, and I've seen messages with megabytes of replies, we trim all quotation, we trim all replies, we trim all footers like with best regards, name and stuff like that. So we basically get the meaningful part of text. Then we get all other possible features, for example, like symbols, meta tokens. And for text, we generate embeddings via like part of LLM. So it's just a compressor part. And instead of text, it outputs embeddings. So that's the most expensive part, to be honest. Then we get all features from emails, and we can use these features as normalized vectors. We fuse them, all these features together, normalize, weight them, and feed it to local, automatically or manually learned multi-layer network with all this architecture. And the results were very, very good, actually. So the only thing is that LLM embeddings are quite expensive. So that's the only drawback. But it's worth to consider that not only for classification, but also for storing these tokens for further, like full-text search, semantic search, whatever. So tokens are important. And what's more important is that this information is not personal data. So you can store them and train on them and do all things afterwards without content of emails. And that's very good for privacy protection, at least I believe. So you can't actually get the message from tokens. Yes. So there are some results. We did two testing independently with some of Responde users. So I've used it on my own corpus, and that person has used it on his own corpus. So I would say that the numbers are better than bias. So bias is a couple of percent worse. But what's more important is that this architecture, I would say, it's more more scalable and more interesting for future use. And counting that embeddings models are usually multi-language, on multi-language case, it will definitely outperform bias, because bias can't distinguish between languages in general. Yes, so I've also tested this architecture on CPU. And yes, GPU is 10 or 100 times faster, especially if you do some sort of batching, especially if you optimize models, and GPU can handle multi-language models. And what's more important, you can actually even speed it up more by splitting it by languages. So for example, if you have mail from one specific language, you can feed it via GPU and leave the rest to whatever you want, or just skip it. And this can be quite efficient, yes. But for personal servers, I think when this feature comes again to MailCow or stuff like that, we'll be able to test it more extensively on CPU. It's still viable, but when I tried it on my MacBook, I decided to rent GPU just to preserve my coolers. Yeah. And one important thing for embeddings is that they're stable. So when you get same message, you get same embeddings. And yes, it's much easier to deploy partial embeddings network than full LLM. And I think that's it. So if you have any questions.
What's your take on even further telling how the system developed?
What do you mean?
You went from a very basic one to now about the marketing kind of thing. What's your view, let's say, in the next
year? Yeah, maybe next year I won't be giving presentation. That's my so for example, this one, the slides were created again by Claude. So it started Apple Script to build the slides in Keynote, because that's the slides creation tool that I'm using. And all diagrams are also kind of created by LaTeX-like types into diagrams that are presented here. Maybe next year I won't need to talk at all. So maybe we have like last year of human-to-human communications. I don't know. Any other questions? Yes.
You have to speak up a little bit.
How you plan to play your multi-class bias from one class to another?
So in bias, it's the same kind of mathematical operation. So when you relearn, you reduce weights of tokens in all other classes and increase weights of all tokens in one class. So basically, that's relearning. And then if you adjust probabilities and operate on fill the pipeline of Bayesian classifier, it will move to another class. And then you just rely on smart exploration to remove all tokens and remove insignificant tokens and stuff like that. But between different classifiers, if that was questioned, between spam and transactional, for example, we can't move message. Because for sure it will be no op. Classifiers are self-isolated between classifier. So classifier produces results. And if you have two classifiers, you have two results, if it's correct.
All right. Thank you.